TV Campfire Podcast.
I was like, yep, okay, so you win for the week.
We're here.
I hate to sound like a broken
record. Oh, no! We're fans.
It's one of the best things on television.
Oh! All right, we got your hold of
it. Oh, no, you didn't.
We talk TV.
That was the best scene ever. Like, that blew me away.
It was absolutely amazing. I just couldn't believe it.
Welcome to the show.
This is podcast number 605, and I'm Libby, your host. And this week, we have returning guests.
Hi, this is Allison, and I write for 6 Degrees of Geek.
Hi, this is Yusun, costume designer and TV enthusiast from Los Angeles.
This is Tom. I chair visual and media arts at Palm Beach Atlantic University in Florida and host the Screen Time podcast for iTunes and Spotify.
Yay! All right, Tom, hit us with the news. What do you got?
Lots of news. Okay, first off, Disney is going to, quote unquote, pretty dramatically reduce spending on linear TV content. So I guess ABC will be sucking more wind than usual. Speaking of which, The Conners has been picked up for its 7th and final season, and The Rookie and Will Trent are being held for mid-season. Amazon Prime, lots of news. First off, boo to the idiots at Paramount. Blade Runner 2049 sequel series has cast Michelle Yeoh in a lead role. So whatever y'all did, say what?
Why
because
are you doing
this? Supposed to be the lead of Section 31, the series, not a standalone movie / backdoor pilot.
Right.
So you can't do both?
Well, not two TV shows at the same time.
But yeah. Still, the fact that Section 31 was in development hell all those years, and then the best they could do was a telefilm instead of the series that we were promised. Elizabeth Banks and Jessica Biel will headline the series adaptation of the Allafair book novel, The Better Sister. For some reason, they've ordered a Legally Blonde prequel series. Noir, starring Nicolas Cage as his character from Into the Spider-Verse, has been given a green light as a series. Silk Spider Society is not moving forward at Amazon. Boys, to no one's surprise, has been picked up for season 5 before 4 premieres. Mr. and Mrs. Smith is getting a season 2. However, comma, with new leads.
Oh.
They would sort of have to, yeah.
Yeah.
Apple TV Plus is nearing a series order for an Anthony Mackie, Jamie Dornan heist show called 12-12-12, and they canceled Constellation after 1 season.
Yeah,
at the CW, a lot of their shows are missing from the fall schedule, most prominently Walker and All-American, which got picked up for new seasons. Superman and Lois is moving to season 4. It's being paired with Librarians, the next chapter. Fox, The Clean Lady got a season 4. Alert Missing Persons Unit got season 3. The Accused is an anthology series, so season 2 will have Felicity Huffman and William H. Macy, real-life spouses, as the leads. They gave a series order for Dennis Leary's military comedy Going Dutch. Family Guy is being held for mid-season, and they canceled Housebroken. FX is negotiating with James Clavell's estate for seasons 2 and 3 of Shogun. As a result, it is submitting in the drama category for Emmys instead of limited series, and that's a big, huge shakeup. Only Murders season 4 is adding Melissa McCarthy. Hallmark picked up When Calls the Heart for season 12. At Max, Frank Grillo is joining Peacemaker season 2 as Rick Flagg Sr., and that's the role he will voice in the upcoming Creature Commandos animated series. Dune Prophecy has cast Jessica Barden from The End of the Effing World and Jihae, a South Korean actor-musician. NBC has announced that Eamon Walker is leaving Chicago Fire after 12 seasons. Cameron Manheim is going to exit Law & Order Original Recipe after season 23. They gave a series order for Reba McEntire's sitcom Happy's Place. Melissa Roxburgh from Manifest has been cast in a lead role of their upcoming drama series The Hunting Party. Lopez versus Lopez got a season 3, and Extending Family is gone. Netflix, lots of announcements. Tim McGraw is going to star in a bull riding drama series. Yeehaw! Will Ferrell and Rami Youssef are going to co-create and star in Golf, a comedy series. Three Body Problem is getting at least a season 2, and the YA dramedy Heartbreak High is going to get a third and final season.
I heard Three Body was getting a season 2 to wrap up. That's what I heard.
That the article in Variety said it's getting at least a 2, but there possibly could be more. Scavengers Reign Season 1 is heading over to Netflix after Max canceled it. However, they have not yet greenlit Season 2. They probably want to see how the ratings were because Girls 5 Eva Season 3 was a big dud. Kristen Johnson will star alongside Leanne Morgan in her upcoming comedy series. Keira Knightley is going to star in a feature film adaptation of Ruth Ware's The Woman in Cabin 10. And Netflix picked up Happy Gilmore 2 from Adam Sandler's Happy Madison Productions. Paramount Plus with Showtime has picked up The Chi for Season 7 and a Neighborhood spinoff with Tracy Morgan. The Peabody Awards are in early June. The Bear, Bluey, and The Last of Us are among the 2024 winners. Star Trek will get an institutional award, and Mel Brooks is getting a Lifetime Achievement Award, and Quinta Brunson's getting a Newcomer Award. Peacock picked up Law & Order Organized Crime for Season 5 and Ted for Season 2. The Office, not a spinoff series, has been picked up for series, and it's going to be set at a Midwestern newspaper office. I'm like, yeah, whatever. Roku has canceled Chad, and that's it.
Did they air Chad?
They aired Chad Season 2, but it's not getting a Season 3.
So weird. I have a friend named Chad who worked on Chad. And, and
that's not confusing at all.
Not at all. And he was very upset that, because it got canceled before it aired, and so nobody got to see his episodes, and then finally it got picked up by Roku, and still nobody saw his episodes. And I mean, I don't have a Roku, so I really didn't. Anyway. I just feel slightly sad for Chad, all the Chad.
I have Roku, and I've yet to actually watch the Roku channel.
So. Yeah, I didn't even know that there was original programming on the Roku channel.
There
you
is.
That's what weird the Al Yankovic story was on. But there were legal ways to watch it without having Roku. I mean, I think they, I don't know if it's an, I forget how I saw it, but I saw it legally.
Yeah, I did too, but I'm pretty sure it wasn't on Roku.
All right, we're going to start talking about the shows. And first up, we're going to talk about Interview with a Vampire. And it premiered its season two premiere. Season two premiere. And for all those who don't remember, at the end of last season, they took Lestat and they killed him. I put that in parentheses.
Well, they did their best.
As much as you can kill a vampire.
Right. They semi-killed him and buried him in a pit. And so now this season is them. They've gone across the ocean and they're looking for original or old vampires. They want to find their root because the thing about Lestat is he always lied to them. He never told them anything about any older vampires, where he's from or anything like that. So they're just kind of wandering around Europe in the middle of World War II, I want to say.
Yeah. Yep.
And they're just wandering, trying to find vampires and not paying attention to, you know, the bombing and the gunfire and the craziness. They're just like, yeah, we don't care. And they're just killing their way through. Well, the one thing is, because it's a war, nobody's paying attention to them leaving lots of bodies. So,
and plus, so far they've been killing a lot of Nazis, so, you know.
Yeah, so really
they won't be missed.
So it was, I thought that it was a good premiere. They've replaced Claudia.
Hallelujah, praise.
What's crazy is that I was like, wait, they replaced her? And I was looking, I was like, did they? And then it wasn't until she really opened her mouth and started speaking. I was like, oh, yes. Okay. Because they
much
physically. Yeah,
oh,
but
much.
Physically, yeah. She looks very similar. It was such
she
a
does.
Weird thing.
I thought
she
so, too. Similar.
I'm glad that they did the soap opera thing where the role of Claudia is now being played.
I know, right?
I love that. It was like I'd opened up a playbill or something, and there's a little insert saying, the role of Claudia shall now be played.
That was on soap, like, they actually have a voiceover announcer say it.
Yeah.
That was so funny. And but the way they had the reason it really worked is how they had their previously on. The previously on very much felt like a production. They're like, this interview is very much, you know, an unreliable narrator, and we're like the way they were describing it and showing it. And then when they had that line come up across the screen, it felt like it fit in with what they were doing. And I was like, oh, that's really nice. So yes, the actress is significantly better. She's
confident.
Yeah, just she's a little scarier too. Like I was never afraid of the other Claudia. I just found her annoying. This
I was gonna say she was annoying, but
yes, not scary. This one's a little scary because you don't know like what she's capable of, what she's thinking about.
That's the thing. You can't tell what she's thinking. Right. Whereas the other one completely, you know, would be a terrible poker player.
Yeah. So this one I thought was really good. And also because Louis doesn't understand the language, where were they? They were like in Romania or somewhere.
Hungary
or Romania or somewhere.
Something like that. Eastern, and so he doesn't understand the language very well, but she does. She bothered to learn it. And so she's just not telling him stuff. So like she's having conversations with people and not translating. And I just thought that was really interesting. And that gave her a lot more control over the situations. And I thought that was super cool. You guys also.
Well, I think that the power dynamic between them is really interesting because in the first season, of course, she's a brand new baby vampire and she has to, you know, listen to what these two guys are telling her. And she's all, like a daughter figure and she still is kind of to them, but she's absolutely, you know, the lowest on the level on the totem pole as far as power is concerned. And now she seems to have flipped that and she's in charge. And Louis just kind of follows her around. It's like, we go this way. And it's like, okay. And he just, you know, sort of follows her like that. But what I thought was interesting also is like the level of contempt that she seems to have for him as well. Yeah. Like she's so done with Louis.
Well, also she knows he's like hallucinating Lestat and she has no patience for that. She's like, you say it's the two of us, but you're always having conversations with him. Like, no.
Yeah. Well, you know, the thing that that was cool about the book, and of course it was even more so because Claudia was so much younger, is that Claudia, unlike these two guys who have lived human lifespans, you know, into adulthood, so they know what it's like to be human. She was turned much, much earlier. So most of her life, by far the majority of her life has been spent as this non-human creature, and she doesn't relate to human beings at all.
And it was really interesting when the woman at the boarding house or refugee place, whatever, basically says, "Oh, wouldn't you like to be with the children?" And she's like, "No." And then yes, why don't you? And I'm thinking, dude, she's gonna probably like take
eat the kids, right?
Yeah, well, that's the thing. She looks like a child, but she's not one, you know. I mean, it's like their children compared to her, really. And so, yeah, she's always, you know, she uses that to her advantage, of course, because people just underestimate her. But she's reached the point where she doesn't have time for this.
Yeah.
She's got her own agenda. Her thing is to find other vampires like herself. And learn from them and be part of this other world. And she doesn't want to have anything to do with human beings other than feeding on them occasionally.
Right.
Whereas Louis still has compassion for human beings and still relates to human society to some extent.
Right. Yusin, you haven't spoken yet. What do you think?
No, I thought it was a great season opener. Got me right back into it. I'm not a huge fan of Armand. I don't love his casting. You know, I feel like, you know, especially because of I did read the book, so I kind of have an image in my own head that I've carried on for years. And then even the casting in the movie was
Antonio Banderas.
Yes, Antonio Banderas. You know, I mean, he's a powerful figure. So for me, the Armand character, I thought is kind of a weak link for me. I don't see the love between the two of them. You know what I mean? There's like, oh, he's the love of my life. And I was like, really? Okay. So I don't see any chemistry between the two of them. And I don't love his casting. So, I mean, we'll see how that goes as the series goes on. So for me, that's kind of the weak link.
I see what you're saying. I think at the beginning of the episode, I would agree with you more than at the end. It felt like where they were going with the end of the episode, that they were really trying to flesh out Armand in a way that could be interesting.
Well, we're going to be seeing a lot more of him. Yeah.
I'm waiting.
Yeah. With where Armand is concerned, they've never cast him, in a way that he is like in the book. because in the book he's actually the age that of the actress that plays Claudia, or the age she's supposed to be. He was turned when he was a teenager, and he's right. described in the book as being almost this Botticelli-like beauty.
Right.
So it's a very, very different character than what they've tried to do either in the movie or in the TV show. And I get why you don't like Armand, because I think on some level we're not supposed to. He's clearly manipulating Louis. And it could be, you know, when he says this is the love of my life, is that really Louis talking, or is that his mind being manipulated by Armand? And right. we don't know that yet. So I'm kind of hanging in there and waiting until we get more information and see more interaction between the two of them, because that could be the very direction that they're going in, is, yeah, we're not supposed to trust or like him.
Right. Yeah, I don't. And that's true. Like, that's why I said I'm waiting. You know what I mean? Like, if it's only the first episode, you know, and I mean, we saw him last season, but clearly he's, you know, going to be a much bigger part, play a much bigger role in this season. So I'm waiting to see, you know, how it rolls, how it unfolds.
All right. Well, let's wrap this one up. I think overall we're seeing a good start for season two.
Oh, yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah. All right. Let's move on. Next up, we're going to talk X-Men 97, and we're going to talk the last two episodes of X-Men 97 of season one. And I just have to say, man, this show is super dark. For a Saturday morning cartoon, I'm not prepared. I was not prepared for this.
We're not on Fox Kids anymore, Toto.
Thank you. I had to warn my brother to not let my nephew watch it, because it got really dark. And I have to say, like, the last episode that I saw where they have the big fight and they take the X-Men and they pick sides between Xavier and Magneto, and then they have this big fight at Genosha base or whatever, that big asteroid. And they have the fight where Wolverine, like, tries to kill him, and then he, like, rips him apart from the
that
inside
is straight out of the comic
oh
books.
Oh, my God. I where know he... you're saying that. I get it. And I've heard that this, like, oh, it's straight out of the comics. It should be totally cool. No, visually, I was scarred. I was not prepared. And
I was surprised they went there.
Oh, is it? I was unclear on it. Did they rip his adamantium?
Magneto
out?
Rips the adamantium.
He rips all of that out of his body.
Okay.
Just body. Like you just see it coming out of his. I was like, oh, I did not need to see that. I did not need to see that. That like straight up gave me nightmares. So I was unhappy. I mean, not only was I unhappy that now Wolverine doesn't have his adamantium, which sucks. Considering how painful it was to give it to him in the first place. So I was unhappy that they just ripped it all out in one big go. And for a second, I actually thought he was dead. And then somebody reminded me of, you know,
the healing factor.
I know he's healing, but I mean, they ripped the bone. Like, that was a lot, man. That was a lot of trauma. So I was very unhappy with that at the end of, what was it, episode 9? And then
that was 109.
Yeah, so then you go to the finale, and he's just, like, unconscious for the whole episode. Like, he never wakes up. But I'll let Tom give us some insight.
I really enjoyed it. I didn't mind. I'm a casual Wolverine fan, but I'm much more of a Cyclops fan.
And really? I hate Cyclops.
Well, that's because you don't know the real Cyclops. This show has is a much more comic book version of Cyclops than anything.
This is the show I first learned about Cyclops. This was my very first
experience. Oh, you haven't seen the movies?
I have, but I saw this first. Or the original cartoons.
The original first.
I saw that first. That was my first exposure to Cyclops, and I've never liked Cyclops.
Well, I like Cyclops. It's the Boy Scout, the Eagle Scout, and the former naval officer in me prefers Cyclops. No, I just... One of the things I really have to give them props for is they burn through so much. I mean, literally years worth of story arcs in 10 episodes, but yet managed to tell a coherent narrative that wasn't so confusing that people, you know, I have friends who didn't watch the original series and aren't huge X-Men fans, but they could jump on board and get the show because it's very, you know, it's got a coherent narrative. I hope the live action Marvel Studios people can take note.
Coherent narrative. Except that they just fired the showrunner from season one.
He did season two too as well.
Well, he wrote the scripts, but he's not going to be doing
yeah,
it.
But still, yeah. I have usually the usually when you, I think it's unfortunate whatever happened, and nobody seems to know what happened. But usually the deputies are able to kind of step in. I don't think there will be that much of a change of tone as long as the you know, as long as they stick to the scripts and the stories are coherent and the animation's good and the voice acting is good. No, but I thought it was a really very satisfying finale. I kind of want to get a t-shirt to wear at Comic-Con that says Magneto was right. Because what Xavier, you know, it's fascinating because all these twits who are like, when did X-Men get so woke? It's built into the DNA of the characters. The same characters Stanley and Jack Kirby created. And the fact that they've, all the parallels for whatever oppressed group stand the test of time and manages to be somewhat relevant with what's going on in the real world. But I just thought it was a really satisfying season. And the way they ended the season with the being split up in different parts of the past. And if you know your...
Well, what was in somewhere in the future?
Right, somewhere in the past, somewhere in the future. But no, I thought it was a great season. I wish we didn't have to wait however long for season two.
Well, the one cool thing too was, when they jump in that fight in the past, and I was like, are those Jaffa? I was like, Jaffa Cree, you know, that was so weird. And then they jump in that fight without knowing who's participating in the fight. And then when they save the guy's life and they're like, who are you? And he says his name. I was like, wait a minute. I was like, is that Apocalypse?
It is.
And I was like, oh, no. They just saved Apocalypse. That's not good.
I trust them to do a much better job with whatever they do with that character in the future compared to the live-action version.
Yes, that's true, too. But though I have to say the live-action version is the reason that I realized that was Apocalypse, though. Allison, did you watch?
I did, yeah.
I can see the look on your face.
I don't understand the love for the show. I spent a lot of time, especially watching this thing and go and the interaction between Xavier and Magneto was like why are you beating up on him because he actually went out of his way to do things the way you wanted him to.
Right.
I don't
he
understand.
He wasn't there and didn't see it.
Yeah, but they've been telling, people have been telling him, you know, I mean, the thing is they keep, and they keep yelling at him, you know, oh, you're so terrible for this, for turning all the electricity off in the world. But exactly. He did not have a choice. If he hadn't done that, they'd all be dead now because all these cyborg things would have killed them.
Right.
And the sentries, whatever they call them. And so I'm thinking, why are you yelling at this? What is wrong with you? He saved your life. It's just the dynamics
between them. You want that t-shirt too that says
Magneto was right.
Yeah,
I'll pick up an extra one for you, Allison.
Yeah. And on the back it says, what are you talking about? It's because that was literally, I was just sitting there through the whole thing going, I do not understand this conflict. I really just don't. So I don't know. It's got Saturday morning logic to me, and so I don't really get it. I like the ideas behind it, because you know I like the ideas behind X-Men when they're talking about they're using them as a metaphor for racism and homophobia and anti-Semitism and all of that and the you know constant war and all of this and you know short-term thinking, and all of that is great. It's just the execution doesn't thrill me. Sorry.
There's a fun Easter egg if you've seen the still frame when President Kelly is deciding what to do. An animated version of Walter White is in the room.
What?
I didn't see that.
I didn't see that. But what I did notice that I found really weird is when they're making this decision, they have Cap and they have Iron Man in the room. And Cap is trying to get them not to fire the nukes or whatever, which makes sense. But then after they see the nukes fail... and this asteroid is coming plummeting to the Earth. I was like, why?
Caused an extinction level event.
I was like, why is Iron Man just chilling? I was like, dude, Iron Man, do your thing. What are you doing? And that's the thing that I thought was strange. They go out of their way to show the rest of the Marvel Universe is there. They're showing all these other characters are all hanging out in the same world. as the X-Men, which is fine. I totally get it. But then if an asteroid is coming, shouldn't they all come and help?
Yeah. I mean,
that,
you know,
that was weird.
That's thing, Iron Man, Captain America, the Hulk. I mean, they should all be like, you know, up there deflecting that asteroid, you know.
Well, to be fair, Cap can't really do
much. I was gonna say Cap can't do squat against
it. And Hulk can't do anything until he
Hulk
gets to the planet.
Fly.
But Iron Man,
well, he can get carried up there.
True. But I mean,
and then he can smash, you know. I mean, that's what he does. It's just kind of his thing.
But I'm just saying Iron Man definitely should have flown up there to help. That was my main issue with I'm like, if you're gonna show all these people,
have them doing something.
Have them do something. Yeah. So that was the thing that bothered me the most. But anyway, let's move on.
That's a fair point.
So hopefully in season two they'll do this better. Next up we're gonna do Hacks. And last time we covered the first two episodes of Hacks. And this time we'll cover, well, I only watched up to three episodes because they kept dropping two episodes per week, which is a lot. That is a lot to cover. And Hacks, for some reason, and I think I figured it out. So the first two episodes I really liked, and then the next two episodes I found I was getting bored. And I think
three is when she gets the chance to guest host the late night show.
Yeah, so the late night one wasn't bad. I actually liked that because you got to see her do it.
But you didn't see the golfing one, right? I take it?
No, I didn't see
that. That's episode
that was
306.
That was four. That was four.
Yeah. Yeah, so I
or
didn't
six?
See that one.
Okay,
yeah,
whatever
six.
That was.
I didn't see that one, but I did enjoy her hosting. And then she's like, oh my God, I have to.
Not like the roast episode?
It was okay. It's like my thing. It was just, I felt like the episode that solidified to me what my problem has been is the one where they're trapped out in the woods. When
okay,
it's just the two of them in the woods together, just going back and forth. I was like, oh. This is what I like about the show. I like their interaction and their conflict, and I like when they work together. They are funny together, the two of them. And the last few episodes has been, they're showing all these other characters doing things, and they're showing them kind of split up doing their own thing, and then they're all trying to come together to get this goal. And I found that I didn't really care as much about the goal. I don't know that I care if she's the lead. And I feel like she's not going to be. Like, the way that this show is constructed, if she ends up being the host of Late Night, you don't really have a show anymore. So I kind of feel like that's like a false...
Or you alter the trajectory of the show you have.
Yes, or you alter the trajectory of the show you have.
It becomes the Larry Sanders Show.
Yeah, so it doesn't feel like that's going to be a thing that's actually going to happen. So, and we're spending all this time and all this energy...
You didn't like the roast episode, which really focuses on a relationship with a DJ.
Her daughter? Yeah.
Yeah.
No. Though her daughter at the end being like, oh, you're just an addict. I get it. That was kind of funny. But I just found that I was kind of getting bored. I'd get like 10 minutes into the episode and then I'd stop and go and do something else. And then I'd watch a couple more minutes and I'd stop and do something else. And I was just getting bored. And I'm not like, I think it's just, and then when I saw them stuck in the woods, I was like, oh, this is what I want. And I watched that whole episode straight through. So that's just me, and I'm going to let you guys talk. So somebody else say something.
Well, I am enjoying this season. And I agree that, you know, there was the whole thing with the talk show is sort of a distraction. But then they, you know, this is part and parcel of her trajectory in the show. She's, you know, she starts out, she's considered washed up, has been, and everything that they do from there is, you know, to try to get her career back. And there's a lot of things that are just, you know, they start and then they end nowhere. And so they try something else. So I think that the whole thing with the talk show is just another one of those. It's something that she wants and she's going to try for, and maybe she'll get it, maybe she won't, but you know, if she doesn't, they'll just move in another direction. And that's just kind of the pace of the show. So that didn't bother me, really. I do agree with you that I love the two of them together. And the more that we get of them together, the better. I'm not that keen on interactions with her agent and his assistant. I mean, she's a little less obnoxious this year, but she's still, not a character that really I can stand very much. And yeah. And every time I'm watching them, I do think, you know, why am I watching this scene instead of something with the other two? So yeah, there is that. But I think that's been going on since season one. That's always been a factor in the show. And so I don't think it's necessarily worse this year than
last
year.
I think they're giving them more screen time this season. So
the assistants?
Like that, yeah, because the whole pickleball thing and all of that, like that was a lot of screen time.
But that's in service. I mean, that was in, yeah, that's why I made the comment in our chats offline that the more they use them, the more the show kind of moves in Entourage territory. And I liked a lot of Entourage, not all of it, but I think that, Libby, you hit the nail on the head. The show works best when it's really the focus on Deborah and Ava and their conflict slash, although I thought it was really interesting, and I've been watching the featurette after each episode, that DJ and Ava really shouldn't get along as well as they do, because
they both want her as a mother figure.
Yes, yes. And the irony is that Ava does not like her real mother at all. But it's kind of an interesting dichotomy. And I forgot about the son-in-law who's the MMA fighter. It's like... It's
oh, just, right.
Yeah. You knew, though, as soon as Ava's like, oh, let's go out into the wilderness hiking, I'm like, you know that's not going to go well. No, I mean,
no, what was so great was Deborah's like, I don't wear a phone. It messes up the lines of my outfit. And I was like, the lines of your outfit, you're wearing three layers of clothes. Like, what are you talking about? That was pretty funny. Like, and then when she's like, I'll climb this tree and I'll look to see where we are. And I was like, she's going to fall out of this tree. And of course, though, what cracked me up is she didn't fall out of the tree the way I expected. She got stung by a bee, and then she fell out of the tree, which was, of course, funnier.
When they finally get to the QVC or whatever, and she's got the big swollen.
My favorite bit, though, is how they call for help.
Oh, yeah.
I don't even know you. Why are you doing this to me? I don't even know you. Why are you doing this? I was dying. I was just dying.
I have been a Jean Smart fan, probably even before her fun turn in the first Brady Bunch movie. And I compare her to Bacon for television because she makes everything she's in.
Oh,
better.
I was like, what? I thought she meant Kevin Bacon. And I was like,
no,
what?
No, bacon, like real bacon. You put bacon on any kind of sandwich. Any kind of, you know.
I like my version too. She's the Kevin Bacon of television.
They both work. They both work. But I gotta hand it to I can't think of her Renee. She's Lorraine Newman's Ava. Her acting has gotten so much better than season one.
Yeah.
She was
I agree.
They cast her because she was a stand-up, and they probably didn't know she was Lorraine Newman's daughter at the time. But she definitely has some of her mom's chops.
I did not know she was Lorraine Newman's daughter.
Yep.
Houston, do you have any comments before we move on?
No, I didn't get to see these episodes.
Oh, okay.
They're fun.
Some of them are better than... I was about to say, some of them are better. The hiking one's fantastic. All right. Next up, we're going to talk Star Trek Discovery, and we're on 7 and 8. We're almost at the end of the series, not just the season. So my main issue with Disco, which I'm actually enjoying the episodes overall, my problem is the story beats that require the characters to be dumb to make the next story beat go forward. So an example in episode 7 is when the Breen are surrounding the Federation base and they're like, hey, I want you guys to give us these two prisoners who have the secret knowledge of this weapon we had no idea about 5 minutes ago, but give us this and then we won't blow up the base. And I was like, but we know if they get the weapon, they literally can destroy the entire galaxy. why would you even let them know that this weapon exists? And so they're like, well, that's a good trade. We'll let them know, and then we'll be ahead of them in the run. And I'm like, no, don't let them know about it at all. Because they were struggling.
Well,
they were struggling to compete with Maul and Locke to get ahead. And that was just two little mercenaries. And now you have the Breen, who is a bigger empire than you. Why would you do that?
That's, you got to remember, though, Maul is the one who tells the Breen about the...
Yeah, but she tells them about it because they allow her in the same room to tell them about it. None of that was necessary. There were so many things that were... And even if they know that the weapon exists, they don't know anything about it. By giving them Maul, she tells them all about the clues and blah, 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 and what it'll do. Like, they didn't know any of that stuff. All she said was, there's some big weapon that they're keeping a secret from you guys. Like, that could mean anything. That doesn't mean anything. By giving them Maul, they now they're in the race. And then my issue with episode 8 is they finally finish the clues. They do everything and they finish it. They literally give the finished clue to the Breen, but they're like, well, we'll get a head start and it'll be fine. And I'm like, no, it won't be fine. Don't give them the clue at all. Like, what are you doing? So I have major issues with those kind of decisions.
I mean, I will give them a tepid defense. They're trying to protect the library, the archive, from being destroyed.
The balance of lives of the people in the library versus the galaxy.
So you're saying the needs of the many outweigh the needs of the few, or the one?
Yes, exactly what I'm saying. I'm very Spock in that. Like, it doesn't make sense, the decisions that they're making. It makes no sense.
Yeah, but Star Trek does that all the time. They, like, you know,
they do, but not in a way that the balance would be the galaxy is destroyed if you fail. Like, this feels very different than them making moral decisions that are slightly like, should they have done this or this? Like, this feels very wrong. Like, it feels like they're being dumb.
Right. Well, it didn't bother me that much. I mean, it did bother me that them handing over Maul, that didn't seem to make sense. But then, like, I'm with Tom with the, you know, tepid defense of, you know, they were trying to save the library. They're not going to not try, you know what I mean? But I don't understand why they sent over. I mean, I thought my assumption was they were going to send over like a fake map. You know what I mean? Like, how would they even know?
Exactly.
How would they even know?
Exactly. There are so many things. That's what Kirk would have done. Kirk would have given them a fake map.
Or I was hoping that the map wouldn't activate a second time.
Yes. Something. Yes. Something.
A one use only.
They could have sabotaged the map so that they got the clue and didn't know how to work it. Like, they're like, oh, it doesn't work. Like, what are you going to do now? You blew up the ship. You know what I'm saying? There were so many things they could have done that they didn't do that I was just like, guys, why are you being
that? That to me was the biggest surprise. I was like, wait, they're just going to hand over the map. Wait, it's going to work. I was like, wait, they're just going to use it. I was like, okay, I guess that's what's happening in the script. So, so that was a problem.
I did love my characters. I liked Michael in the dreamscape trying to figure out how to figure out the clue and all of that. All of that was good. Like, I enjoyed that part of the story.
Right.
I just don't like that the script is requiring the characters to be dumb. That's my main issue. So, Tom?
That's fair.
Yeah.
You know.
Otherwise, though, it's been an enjoyable ride. Yeah, you know what I mean? Yeah. For the last season. I mean, you know,
I still like the first officer commander guy. I like him.
Right.
I like how he fits in the team. So, from a character standpoint, I like all the characters.
Right. Although I did think it was pretty obvious and predictable that Maul was going to shoot the leader and take over, basically. You know what I mean?
I didn't think she was going to take over, but I thought she was going to get the second-in-command guy to kill him. And then she would just be like the second-in-command guy whisperer. I didn't think she was literally going to be like, I have now to... And I was like, they're going to follow a human? Like, I don't know about that.
I really wish they'd given her a better name.
Than Maul?
Like,
yeah. Especially when they start making, you know, in the interviews, they reference Bonnie and Clyde, because everybody knows that Gangster's girlfriend is his...
The leader?
Mall. That's the term for a gangster's girlfriend.
Oh, the mall. A mall.
I had never heard that
before. M-O-L-L. Yeah, I mean, I can look it up right now.
And no, I believe you. I just never heard of it before. So that's
yeah.
No, you're right. It's a mall or a gun mall.
Yeah. I just thought it was lazy writing.
Saying it's a little on the nose. Is that what you're saying?
A little bit.
Like calling your Android Data.
Yeah.
But anyway, anybody else have any other thoughts? I mean, I don't want to poo-poo on the last season because I am still enjoying the season. I just
and
feel
SMG
like
is my queen.
Yes, I'm just saying, be smarter, writers. That's all. Just like, if I can figure this out, that's not good. It's not good. All right, let's move on. Next up, we're going to talk Doctor Who. And the first episode we're going to talk is Space Babies.
Are we going to talk the first three or just the first two?
We can talk the first three. That's fine. Mainly because the I want to do three, mainly because the range in quality was so vast that I feel like we have to give them all three in order to get to that. And Yusen, I'm going to let you go first, because since Space Babies is the only one that you saw.
Yeah, you know... I didn't hate Space Babies. You know, you told me that it was going to amuse me and that I would enjoy it. And you know, it was a little weird having the CGI mouths on the babies so they could have the, like, full
like
conversations.
But it's like the commercials they do, like, with E-Trade.
So, and they did a good job. I mean, you know, it wasn't, like, groan worthy or anything. But, you know, the whole idea of... I don't know. I didn't love the episode. I didn't hate it. It was middle ground for me. But like, I thought that the fact that the boogeyman or the bogeyman was like made out of snot was ridiculous. I thought, what? I was like, and they made a big deal about her getting like, you know, slimed with it. And I thought, I don't need to watch this. And then they moved the space station using the, you know, using the
it was
the
very
gas.
Much it's very much child humor. All of it
yes.
was child humor.
Yes,
absolutely.
All of it was childish. And then like the moving the station with the gas from the diapers, you know, like
fart
you know
power.
The yeah, I was like,
that
what? I just thought it was kind of basic, you know, and kind of
it
base
was.
And
it was,
you know,
but it was the tone. Like, that was the tone of the whole episode. And if you accept it, I felt like if you accept that that's the tone, then all of it works. If you don't make that leap, then yes, it doesn't work.
I don't know.
I thought it was cute. I was amused. That's all. I'm not saying it's a great episode. I was just amused.
Right. Well, here's what I will say, though, is I'm not sure about my doctor. I don't love my doctor. I feel like he's sort of bipolar. He's like very, you know, he's like manic and then he gets kind of a little bit, you know, serious. And then he's like, there's something like a little hyper about him in a way that I don't normally.
I know.
But that's what I mean by like it's. He's not steadfastly hyper. I don't know how to explain it. There's just something slightly, I have to watch more episodes. This is my very, I only watched the one. So I don't know. I have to ease into him. I didn't like Matt Smith at first. I thought Matt Smith was way too hyper, even though the doctor's supposed to be hyper. And then I grew to love Matt Smith. So I say this because I'm just being completely honest. I just don't know how I feel about the doctor 100%. I don't, maybe it's because I didn't love the episode. But you know, like the way he was like laughing about her getting snotted on, you know what I mean? Like, you know, he was like laughing too, like maniacally, like he just thought it was so funny that she got covered in snot. And I thought, yeah, I don't know. It just seemed childish of him to be enjoying it that much. And he seemed kind of manic to me. So like, I don't know. I didn't love the first episode. I didn't love the first doctor. So I'm waiting to hear what you guys say about the next two episodes.
I did not love the second episode at all. I
liked the second episode quite a bit.
I didn't like either, but I liked the second better than the first.
I actually despised the second episode.
Why did you despise The Devil's Chord?
Because what was the character who was the music?
The maestro.
Oh, the maestro. Like, having a physical representation of the music just coming out and, like, attacking people and tying them up, and then having, like, the Beatles be, like, bad music Beatles, and just, and then, to your point about the Doctor, in the last couple of episodes, the Doctor, the first one, the Boogeyman, let off some sort of chemical thing that made the Doctor afraid. Sure, fine. And yeah. In this episode, it's the daughter of the toy maker who's Maestro. And he's like, oh my God, it's the daughter of the toy maker. And now he's all scared. And I'm like, dude, you beat the toy maker. Why are you scared? And so my issue is not that the Doctor's manic. I just thought the Doctor was just, I was like, why is he so scared? Like, calm down, man. Like, so.
Didn't the by regeneration occur at the end of the battle with the Toy Maker?
Yes, it did, but I just thought it was just two episodes in a row where the Doctor's just super scared, and I was just like, I don't like that. I don't like the Doctor. My Doctor's supposed to be confident.
Super confident.
And so having him scared two episodes back-to-back was just off-putting to me, so I did not like that, but also I really didn't like Maestro. Like, a lot.
I like Jinx's Maestro. I thought she was suitably malevolent. And
way over the top.
Well, dude, I mean.
That's how the villains are usually portrayed on Doctor.
Yeah, but it's even more so than normal. It just really rubbed me wrong. Like,
I don't know. I mean, I can't say no to any of the criticisms that you have. I thought both episodes were pretty terrible. I just thought that the second one was slightly more tolerable than the first, because the first was just bad on so many different levels. Not just the cutesy baby crap and the fart jokes and the snot jokes, which are just inane. Yusin also brought up the fact that the Doctor is just, you know, not feeling like the Doctor, and I think what I'm getting, as much as I like Shurigatwa in other things, I'm finding I don't like him as the Doctor. He's got this thing where it's just, I don't feel like he actually is the Doctor. I feel like he's playing the Doctor. Like, he's a high school production and he's playing the Doctor. And he just doesn't have the gravitas. He doesn't have the depth. His only reaction to anything that's emotionally stressful, even emotionally stressful in a good way, is to cry. If I have to see one more tear, just artfully going down one cheek, I am going to lose my mind. That's all we get from him. And in between that, we just get him, you know, just being constantly up.
Jazz hands. Lots of jazz hands.
Yeah. And like he's just discovering everything for the first time now.
Yes.
So it's like we're batting between one and the other.
I'm really hoping he will settle in. I see elements. I do feel like he has the gravitas. I feel like the problem is he hasn't settled in. Like, I'm really...
Well, they've got to give him the raw material, the script to work with.
Yeah, and the script has been giving him nothing so far. And also, God knows the direction may be giving him absolutely nothing, too. So, because I've seen him do better. So, I think that... I mean, I'm willing to wait and see if he actually settles into this, but so far I'm just really not impressed, and I'm not impressed with the writing, although I will say when we start talking about episode 3, it does get much better.
Yeah, 3 is good.
But the first two episodes were really really tough for me to get through. And the second episode, I have to say that Jinx Munson was the only bright thing about, and the costume, the first black and white costume that they have her in, fantastic. But other than that, there was nothing good to say about that episode.
I liked the, I mean, just the title, The Devil's Chord. Most people don't know about that chord. By the way, anybody who's seen WandaVision, they use the Devil's Chord in every single one of the theme songs, and especially in Agatha All Along.
Yeah.
So moving on to episode 3, Boom, it really reminded me of classic Star Trek in a good way, A Taste of Armageddon specifically. I thought the script was a little unfocused because you have about two or three ideas. Are we against corporations? Are we against the concept of modern warfare, et cetera,
et cetera? I feel like they were doing both. That was like a combination.
It was overstuffed.
I think the script could have been a little bit more focused, but I thought it was a pretty good outing overall.
Yeah.
I was surprised they killed so many people in the episode.
Oh, my God. They really did. Like, the thing that's crazy is, because I like that the episode starts off, like, the first 10 minutes, the doctor's not there. It's like we're getting an idea of this world. We're learning these people, and we're understanding how this war is happening, and then... they immediately kill like a couple of the people. The doctor hears the screaming and comes running and walks right into a trap, like walks right into the thing that just killed the last guy.
And note to Disney corporate, if you want to impress me with how much money you're spending on this iteration of Who, do a better job than a Roomba for a landmark.
No, but it lit up. It had little colors. You can see
Have you
lights.
Seen a real Roomba? They light up too. And terrorize cats.
Well, that was crazy is what I did like, because they talk about the fact that the bomb uses your own DNA as the accelerant, and mm-hmm. that the doctor, because of him being the doctor, that meant that the explosion was going to be insane. Yeah. And so that was really kind of cool. I liked how they did that.
And insidious.
Yes.
From a weapons design standpoint.
Yeah. And I also liked how the end, like, they were like, oh, when they were talking about they were afraid of an ambulance, I was like, why are you guys running from an ambulance? That doesn't make sense. And then you see the ambulance and you're like, oh, okay.
Oh, and the healthcare system. That's the third.
I just lots of ideas going through this episode.
Yeah.
Like, but if you're not part of the religion, whatever the religion is, then you don't get healthcare at all.
What do they call them?
It's Moffitt's movie. It's Moffitt's religion that he cooked up during Matt Smith's term, and I forgot what they're called.
Right, they're called like the Ordained Marines or something.
Ordained Marines or something like that.
Yeah, but if you're not the right religion sector or whatever, you don't get medical attention at all. They were just like, oh, I guess they're gonna die because they're not registered.
You're not a believer. You get to die.
Yeah, and I was like, wow, okay. But yeah, the thing is, it was great.
I thought that there was a lot to like in this episode. I liked all the various ideas that were in the episode. Like Tom said, though, I think there was just too many of them because you couldn't really address. So it's like, well, okay, we're this is going to be a theme against war, and it's a theme against corporate overreach, and it's a theme against blind faith, and it's a theme, it's like, okay, I've lost track now. What are we talking about? it was overstuffed. It was too many ideas in one thing. And then on top of all that, thrown in, and I realize they're trying to do an arc here, but the whole thing with the magic snow was just, you could have had the whole episode without that at all.
Yeah,
and it would
have
played the exact same way. It was just, it was not needed.
We just did it last episode. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But they it's just like, okay, reminding you that we've got an arc. Okay. Yeah, fine. So
I thought Bad Wolf was much more organic.
Much yes. more. Yes. Because you know, the thing is, what was cool
was
about Bad Wolf was that it was in the background.
It was literally in the background.
You had to think back to realize, oh right, they've been breadcrumbs all throughout, instead of hitting you over the head with it and going, you know, okay, it's the arc again, everybody stop and look. So yeah. And then, you know, it's typical Moffitt, so the it ends with the power of love triumphing over all, and so okay, come on. So yeah, there's like that little saccharine bit that I wasn't too thrilled with, but overall it was a huge, huge leap over the first two episodes.
Yeah,
definitely.
It was much better.
It felt more like a Doctor Who episode.
Agreed.
I looked it up. It's the Anglican Marines.
Thank you. There we go.
This whatever Ruby is, it better pay off better than the Impossible Girl, because they dropped on that arc.
Yeah, I don't even remember how that ended. I just remembered it was a thing.
It was All right,
let's move on. Next up, we're going to talk about the last two episodes of Fallout. And Tom, you lead us up on episode 7.
Of course, the write-up on IMDb wasn't that helpful. It just says, every generation has their own dummy ideas. The main things, Maximus Squire, who took off with his power core, his foot is severely jacked up.
Ugh.
So he trades the power core for medical care from a shady dude. And of course,
it's the same shady dude we met way back in like episode 2, who was apparently screwing chickens or something.
Yeah. I forget. We've seen him before. But anyway, his foot instantly heals. But when he runs into Maximus and Lucy later on and gets shot through the neck with an arrow, and I was thinking, are we on the right network? Because that's like Ghosts. But he doesn't die or anything and is healed. And then they're like, dude, you might be a ghoul.
that was really funny.
Yeah, he was like, but the guy promised that he was just going to heal me. And then he went, oh, crap.
And he'd never lie, of course.
Of course not, for not a power core. Go ahead.
And meanwhile, in the flashback, we see Coop.
Oh, this episode was all flashback. That's right.
Coop gets invited to this thing at the at Vault Tech, and he has a not so secret admirer dude.
In the finale.
No, I'm talking about the voice of the robot or the voice.
That dude was his friend. They knew each other. They were friends.
Anyway, yeah, they've been buddies for a while.
He's starting to realize that Vault Tech is up to no good, and he's trying to ascertain how far into it his wife is. So he gets he meets the revolutionary woman. I can't remember her name.
Moldaver, something like that.
He meets her, and she basically says, Vault Tech's not what you think it is, and, you know,
here's this listening device to go spy on your wife. Device,
you can hear me. So he basically hacks his wife's, the arm thingy, whatever.
It's called a Pip-Boy.
The Pip-Boy. And so, of course, in episode 108, she realizes something's wrong because it's transmitting when she doesn't have it on. But, and meanwhile, Norm is desperate to get in, realizes that everybody from Vault 33 came from 31.
All the overseers
came from Vault 33. So he thinks something strange is going in. Oh, and they have the election, which Uggams wins.
Which is no surprise.
By the way, she looks great in her 80s. Thank you very much.
Yeah, she really does.
Does.
Yeah.
But, and then she reassigns Chet to go with the widow with the eye patch to move into 32.
Because 32 got decimated. So now they're going to repopulate 32.
Repopulate 32.
Suspiciously very, very clean by the time everybody gets in there.
Also, I want to mention, because I thought it was hilarious when they punish, when they catch Lucy or Goosey, and they go to punish her, and it looks like they're gonna kill her, like they, you know, they're gonna,
oh, when she's,
you know,
in the other vault.
And her sentence is to go topside.
Is to go topside.
Which is and what she wanted in the first place.
And of course we're gonna give you 2 weeks worth of supplies. And of course we're gonna have someone carry the supplies up to the surface for you. And
it felt like an episode of The Price is Right to me.
I know, it was crazy.
Yeah.
And then Maximus shows up in his armor like, rawr! And she's like, no.
Okay.
After he backs some people up.
I know, he was like, oh, sorry, are you hurt?
Sorry,
like,
my bad.
My bad.
I wanted to mention that because that's very indicative of how funny I find the show. Like, I didn't think that I would find the show so funny, but like, it definitely, you know, has different, you know, injections of humor, you know, here and there through every episode. And I find myself laughing or smiling or whatever. And, you know, I'm very surprised at how much I enjoy the humor in the show. So, like, that's all, you know, part of what makes me like the show. It isn't just completely dark and serious and, you know, desolate. It has this, like, goofy humor. The one thing I want to say, though, is... and they started, that was the episode 7 was where they really kind of started to emphasize the romance between the two of them, you know,
right,
and
right.
I'm not sure I'm buying it. I don't know that I feel the chemistry.
Well,
yes.
Part of it is because Maximus has like the emotional complexity of a child.
Yeah. Yes.
That's
he is
part
a
of
child.
Yeah, I know. That's part of the problem. I mean, he grew up in the Brotherhood. And they were all like, we're like monks. And so he's only been around guys. So like, he doesn't even know how to interact with a woman at all. And
right.
She's very much been sleeping with everybody in the vault that's technically not related to her, but sort of.
Right.
And sometimes even kind of related to her.
Right. Exactly.
So she's in a different place. And so the two of them together feel like you need to let him catch up. You know?
Was 107 the episode where she basically said, she asked him, do you want to have sex? And he's like, I'm good. And she's like, what?
Yeah.
And like, basically his...
She had to explain to him what sex was. And I was like, yeah, these two are not gonna...
The lack of sex education among the Brotherhood...
is terrifying.
Yeah.
The writers chose to explain that, it was like, oy vey.
Well, that's probably why the chemistry thing is weird, because like I said, he's kind of childlike. And so it makes you feel a little like, I don't know if I want that to happen.
Yeah, I mean, he has to grow up a lot, I think.
Yeah.
And that's what we're going to get in the next season, is that kind of development. Because right now, no, I can't see them hooking up together.
No.
As he
and
is
if they
right
did,
now.
It would be kind of gross. Yeah.
Yeah. No.
So I do like him having feelings for her.
Yeah.
And being like his first crush, like that's fine.
And
his loyalty to her really works. And
well, I really like the scene where she was like, you're such a good man, and you know, and you should come with me to, you know, Vault 33, and then he was like, I'm not a good man, you know. And I thought that was a really good scene for him and
right.
acting, you know what I mean? Where he, you know, admits that he killed someone, and then she was like, I threw acid on an innocent man's face, you know what I mean? Like, she's like, We're good. Like, you know, it's not a problem. So
moving into 108,
go ahead.
You know, basically she offers the head, but he says, I'll take a decoy head so mm-hmm. you can get your dad back. So he goes back to the Brotherhood with the fake head.
I have to say, he folded so fast.
So quickly, and
so
then decided
fast.
To leave them.
Although, I was surprised to find out that he didn't sabotage his friend's
Oh, I was too.
I was not surprised. I said it all along.
Because I thought that was the case, and I had big reservations about his character until that was revealed, and then it was suddenly like, oh, I can like you now.
Yeah. See, I didn't. I was the only one that said I didn't think it was him.
I said I was undetermined. I was still waiting.
Oh, I totally thought he did it. it would make more sense. But of course, Lucy meanwhile takes the head to Moldaver to get Dad, and Dad is caged up.
Whoa.
And then Moldaver starts talking about Dad's past. And no one's surprised.
Well, I wasn't surprised that the way he killed that dude in the pilot, I was like, he's not from down here. I knew that, but I didn't see the reveal. That was a good reveal.
Okay, but wait, somebody explain to me his wife, Rose. Why was she a zombie like that? I didn't understand.
She was caught in the explosion.
Right.
When they bombed the town.
Whatever the town was.
Right. And so she got irradiated. And if you get too much radiation, you become a ghoul. And so she became a ghoul, and she became a feral ghoul. But that's why she looked like that.
And I would think that also she was close enough to where the bomb really hit
right.
that she's I mean she was severely, severely burnt at the time. So there's not a lot left of her at this point.
Oh, so she's a feral ghoul. Because I was like, but she didn't seem conscious. Like, okay, I got
she's
it.
She's a feral ghoul. And...
But so, and she was in love with, Moldaver and Rose were in love with each other. It seemed like they were a couple.
It sort of. I wasn't sure. Like, that, like they were, I was getting both vibes. Like, maybe.
Yeah.
Okay.
Or maybe they've just been through so much that, you know,
they were either
you
really
could take
good,
it either way.
Yeah, I felt like they were like, you could either take it as they were really good friends or something else going on. And they weren't really clear. And that, and they, it's open to interpretation. But either way, the dad absolutely killed her. Which,
yes.
So that really changed Lucy's view on her father a lot.
As it should.
As it should. And also, he kept trying to say that she was lying, but then you could see she was having memories. She was remembering. Like, as they were telling her what her mom did, she was like, oh, yeah. And memories from your childhood can trigger like that. So I really liked that they had her start to remember. So it's not about who does she trust more. Does she trust her dad more? Does she trust his stranger more? She trusts her memories.
I loved how they did the reveal, though, playing out in two timelines simultaneously. The flashback with Cooper meeting his number one fan in the past, and then present day, you know, or slash hundreds of years later, where he confronts, do we just call Walton Goggins,
Hank.
We just call him the ghoul?
He's just the ghoul. Yeah, they just go by the ghoul.
But
what I really like is they finally reveal what he's been trying to do this whole time.
Is find his family.
Yes. Find his family, yeah.
Because before, we didn't really have a solid motivation for him, and now we do. So I really
like what I love the arc of his character actually better than pretty much any other character in the show. Because he is just a stone cold villain when we first meet him, and he's horrible, and we're, you know, he's a threat. And I mean, he's a cool threat, but he's just, you know, a villainous character. And so you don't really expect that much from him, and except for the fact that we keep getting these flashbacks. And it's like, okay, well, he was okay once, but, you know, but as it goes along, more of him as a human being comes out, and his rationale for why he's doing what he's doing comes out.
And also, I think being around Lucy
clearly has an influence on
him. It's making him remember what it was
to be human.
To be human.
To be a good human.
Right.
Yeah, because I think, you know, after everything that he's been through, it's so easy for him to just put all his feelings aside and just assume the world is garbage now, and people are garbage, and he's living for nothing except finding his family. And aside from that, he doesn't have to care about the humanity of anyone else. And what Lucy does is teach him that that's wrong. That there are things worth caring about. There are people worth caring about. It's okay. It is still valid to be a good and moral person.
There's
and that wakes
scene,
it up in him.
That great scene where he's trying to get information from the father and son and, you know, the daughter, and he's eating, and they make you think that he's eating the daughter. And
right.
That was brilliant. And then, of course, he kills the son because the son's going to try to kill him. But,
I really felt bad for that because the thing is, he egged the son on. Like, if he had just left and just left the son probably wouldn't have tried anything. But he, like, he poked at the son until he did it. I feel like he egged that on a little bit.
But
that's just
Norm discovering that Vault 31 is a bunch of people in cold storage and run by a portable brain.
Well, my thing is, he's
the voice of Cooper's obsequious friend from the past.
But what's crazy is he's like, oh, you just got to go freeze yourself and maybe we'll wake you up. And I was like, or he's a hacker. I was like, dude, hack the thing and open the door. Like, I like that they cut it so we don't see what he's going to do next. But I'm like, dude, don't go freeze yourself. You're using your brain against this little brain in a box. Just like put him on a shelf so he can't move and then hack the system and open the door. Like,
yeah, I would be surprised if they don't have him do something like that, because they're not just going to put him into cold storage for an entire season.
He's one of the leads of the show.
So. Yeah, and I was just like, first of all, they've shown that he's a hacker. So him being able to hack that door feels like something he should absolutely be able to do. And also, having played the game, hacking is a skill that you get. And once you get that skill, you can hack almost anything. anyway, So, and by the way, it is a weird skill in the game that I've actually gotten pretty good at. It's strange. Anyway, but it's not like a hacking skill that you can use like anywhere else. Only in the game. Well, let's wrap that up. I think we're saying thumbs up for season one of Fallout.
Great first
and thankfully.
Season.
Thumbs up.
Yeah, very fun.
There is one great big glaring logical flaw in it.
Uh-oh.
Which I have to say, which it goes to the core of the show, which is the whole idea is that you know, everything starts because they have the people from 33 come over for the wedding.
No, it's 32.
32
comes over for
okay 32 excuse me 32 come over for the wedding. But if the group from 33 which is the I'm getting them
the
mixed
whole,
up
the whole
which is the one
30,
that has the
whole
that
base
has
is
the
33 overseer. 33 well, is the home base where Lucy
no
was
there's
born.
Three of them. There's 31
know,
32
know,
and 33
I know 33 so, where Lucy's from. That's where she was born.
Okay, so 31 is where all the overseers are
correct.
Coming from.
They're frozen.
Okay, so
frozen.
All right, so here's the thing, but they know what's going on is the idea. They know what's happening, which means they should have known that if they're hearing people coming in from 32, that those people should be dead and they should not be hearing from those people.
They didn't know that 32 was taken over and were dead. That
but
the
over the majority of people from 33 know they're innocent.
But
the
I'm
overseers
saying, no, they didn't.
The overseers
that's,
do.
That's no, they didn't. They said that they didn't know, or else they would have cleaned it up. Remember, it was a mess. They had no.
Yeah, well,
idea.
They should have. That's why I'm saying I think it's it. I did not get that they did not know, and I don't understand how they could not have known.
They didn't know, and also I think we don't know
because
how...
they were killed by they were killed deliberately because they found out what was going on. So they were, if they're going to be deliberately killed, then the overseers should know that they've been killed. And if they're hearing somebody saying, hey, we want to come over for a wedding, they should know those are not the people that they took care of. Those
I
are
see,
not the actual
okay, I see what you're saying.
Denizens because... of that vault. And so if they know that, why are they letting them in? That's my problem with the show.
Wait, are you saying that the people in 32 were killed by the overseers in 31?
Yeah, yeah, that's it's insinuated
because they
the
found
messages,
out what was going on.
All the messages on the walls were like, we know the
we
secret,
know.
We know
yeah.
whatever, and it was all in the walls in blood.
So they were deliberately killed. They were made by, I don't know whether
they were
some weird gas or they were made to turn on each other. And kill each other off.
But we don't know how that... There's stuff we don't know. So I'm just going to leave it and see if season two answers the question.
Okay, fair. Fair enough. But at the moment, it just seems like a glaring logical flaw.
It depends on what happened. Because definitely the overseers in 33 didn't know. So I'm not sure why they didn't know. But anyway, let's move on. So overall, we're still saying.
Oh yes,
up.
It's still a great show.
Yeah,
it's just
really
like that one
great,
thing suddenly
fun
hit
show.
Me. And...
Yeah. All right. If you have any questions or comments, you can leave them at tvcampfire@gmail.com. Listen to us on sci-fi.radio, 6 Degrees of Geek, YouTube, and iTunes. And we'll talk to you guys next time. Bye-bye.
Bye. Bye.